I was recently in Adelaide and I was walking around and I thought to myself, I'd been talking to someone the previous day and they were saying, you should tweet. And I was going, oh, I don't want to tweet. And they said, no, 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 you should. And so I thought, I was walking around Adelaide and I had to go somewhere, but I was just filling in time really. I thought, all right, if I had to tweet, what would I tweet? And then I thought, if I had to tweet, I would tweet, this is me walking around the streets of Adelaide where I don't live. How come when you're in your own city walking around the city, you feel sort of cool and in control and everyone else looks normal? But when you're walking around some other city, you feel sort of like an outsider and everyone else looks cool, even though I bet they aren't, which is probably more than 140 characters. But then I thought, well, maybe if you do tweet, the fact that you have to actually makes you have lots of interesting thoughts, because you've got to, you know, people always say about Twitter, oh, no one wants to know what you had for breakfast. But presumably if you do it in a way that makes people want to follow you, you'd say more interesting things too. So does the fact that you have to tweet actually generate more thoughts than you would ordinarily have, in the same way that a deadline, you know, or does for a piece of work? You get the work done in circumstances in which if it wasn't for the deadline, you wouldn't have. So that's what I want the answer to. You can call on 1-300-800-222 or text 0467-922-702. I thought I'd ask a prolific and no doubt proficient tweeter, Annabelle Crabb, also known as an ABC political commentator. Hello, Annabelle.
Hello. Look, I'm very pleased just thinking about getting involved.
Well, it depends what the answer to my question is. If it's just, it just makes you put thoughts you already have down, then there's no benefit. But if there's actually a benefit in that it makes you think of more stuff that might be good stuff rather than just, you know, vegging out, then maybe then it's a good thing to do. What do you think?
Can I suggest that you're thinking about it very much as, you know, in terms of, and this is very generous of you, what you can offer to others?
Oh, no, I'm definitely not thinking that.
Oh,
no, I'm
well,
thinking the thought I had was not a thought that I would otherwise have had if I wasn't thinking, what would I tweet if I had to? But I'm glad I had it. I thought, that's a good thought. I'm happy with that one. So I couldn't give a stuff if anyone else had it.
Well, look, I think that there is a discipline about the Twitter, which is interesting, and it is. It's kind of like the old-fashioned art of headline writing, actually.
Yeah.
Because people, and, you know, the gut response to Twitter is the, I don't want to know what you have for lunch. Although I must say, when I first started on Twitter, one of the funniest tweets I remember reading, and, you know, everybody's different, and this is probably not that interesting to anyone else, but I remember reading a tweet from somebody that just read, "This salad sandwich is exactly as disappointing as I feared it would be."
I like that one.
You know, and it was just, this is what I really like about Twitter, actually. I mean, sometimes those nothing ones can be quite charming because there's something so universally human about that. I mean, sued disappointment. It was just the sort of sad, resigned nature of the community.
Yeah, I like that.
And it was sort of elegantly written as well, although clearly dashed off, you know, in a fit of pique. So the things that I think are useful about it is, if you know you're going to be tweeting about something, I mean, I tweet things that are happening in politics and so on, they do concentrate your thoughts a bit and compel you to summarise in a way that you might not otherwise in conversation or in a more lengthy form of words. Often they're more effective if they have, you know, a bit of humour or a reference or something. So, I mean, in that sense, it's kind of a bit challenging.
But is there a time when you think, I should tweet something now, I better think of something clever, and then you actually do think of something clever? No.
No, because, I mean, the more useful ones, I think, are the ones where something happens to you or you have a thought and then off you go. I mean, I think if you're manufacturing, if you're sort of thinking, gosh, I must tweet because otherwise the universe will miss me or something, I mean, then that's probably not a very good occasion. And I mean, that's also what I like about Twitter is that, you know, if you go missing for a day or two, it's fine because there's plenty of other people there to take up the cudgels. And I think it's, you know, when you've got something that you feel as useful or perhaps interesting to you or possibly interesting to others. I mean, it's kind of up to you, really. But
I
find on the other end, which is as a receiver of items, I mean, obviously when you set up your Twitter account, you follow people. So you might just only follow one person or you might follow 1,000. And I mean, in my case, I follow a lot of news organisations and people, you know, and politicians and people from overseas news organisations. And I feel that that kind of gives me a direct line to breaking news that I might otherwise take all day to find if I was combing all those websites on the internet.
Mm. No, none of that's really, I mean, that's all very well for you, but none of that's really of interest to me. I just thought it might
say that, but can I, apart from the sort of news stuff,
yeah,
the thing that I think is a real treasure about this platform is that you find little random things. You know, 25% of all the tweets that are sent internationally have links attached. Mm. So it might be a fascinating article from somewhere, or a funny picture, or a link to some document associated with some story. I mean, you constantly are exposed to these funny, charming, interesting, absorbing, fascinating things that you wouldn't really have the time to find. I mean, if you sat down with an internet terminal and searched all day for the interesting things that might interest you in the world,
yeah,
you still wouldn't find any sort of proportion of them. And the randomness of that platform is what really appeals to me, that you can just happen on across it and think, well, that's a very interesting article about meerkats. I would never have found and read that.
But you know when you don't want to work and then you've got a deadline for your column, mm-hmm, so you make yourself, and at the end of X amount of time you've written your column, mm, and you read it back and you think, gosh, I'm clever. And then, as you do sometimes, don't you? I bet you do. And you think, gosh, I'm clever, and I would never have done that if it weren't for that deadline. See, that's the only way I can imagine Twitter working for me, if it actually made me do something.
You have a very particular psychology, don't you?
Yeah, I just want to use it if it's going to generate in me these artificial deadlines that make me think of something clever to say that I can then read and think.
I can't help you with that one. I don't think, I mean, unless you set yourself some deadline to tweet. I mean, it's just not really compulsory. But what it does, I think, I do think you might find some use in the sort of sharpening of your thoughts and think, well, how can I put that
succinctly,
precisely? And you might find that you come up with bon mots that you're very pleased with.
Yeah. Well, okay. Well, no, I could definitely. That's what I'm after.
Right. Well,
bon mots.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, Annabelle.
Well, I hope I've been of some assistance.
No, you have.
I'm not entirely sure, but, you know.
No, you have. Well, you've given me the texture of the whole thing and made me feel that perhaps I'm driven in a way that you aren't to be.
productive.
No, not productive, just to be, well, in a worse way, really. You seem a lot more relaxed and peaceful about the whole thing than me. So I envy and admire you.
And I wish you every luck with your enterprise.
Thank you, Annabelle. Annabelle Crabb, ABC political commentator. You're on ABC local radio. If you've got a view on this, does it actually force you to think up stuff that is, you know, reasonably clever, I mean, at least mildly clever, that you wouldn't otherwise think of? And so at the end of a week of tweeting, you have all these thoughts that you never would have had you not been so, because of the power of the deadline. 1-300-800-222 or the text 0467-922-702. Ironically, don't tweet your answer in. We're also going to talk to technology commentator Stilgarian, who is also a prolific and proficient tweeter. Hello, how are you? Thanks for joining us.
James, thank you for the compliment there about being proficient, but you are terrified of this, aren't you?
No, I'm not. No, I'm not terrified of it. I just want to know whether it's going to be of any use to me. That is,
absolutely,
is it going to help me generate, like, I mean, all that stuff Annabelle was talking about, being in touch with lots of and reading stuff. That's good.
She's spot on.
Yeah, I'm sure she is. But I just want to know, like, do you feel that you have, at the end of a week's tweeting, a number of things you've thought of because you had to tweet something that you wouldn't otherwise have thought of. You, 10 little thoughts you've got.
I see where you're coming from here, and I think what's wrong about your thinking is that you have to tweet. You don't have to tweet.
Yeah, I know. But you don't have to do anything.
I had a
deadline to write a book once, and the deadline passed, and I rang them up and said, I haven't finished, and they said,
Oh, that's like the great quote from Douglas Adams, the guy who wrote Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. He said, I love deadlines, especially the whooshing noise they make as they go past.
Yeah, so I guess, yeah, exactly. I guess what my question is, does Twitter sort of apply artificial deadlines to you that actually stimulate your mind?
No, absolutely not, because I'm not a performing seal.
We're different.
The fact that I talk to people on Twitter is no more a sense of deadline than the fact if I'm having a beer with someone at the pub that I might have to say something before it's my round.
Yeah, right.
It's just not. But you're asking about whether it helps in this process, and this really echoes Annabelle's stuff. Like, I was on a panel at the Sydney Writers' Festival this afternoon.
Mm.
This morning, I'm discussing... Well, discussing's a bit of a grand word, isn't it? I was having a discussion. I was talking about it, gossiping about what I was going to write with some friends on Twitter.
Yeah.
And some people who, you know, because this is a public conversation and thousands of people potentially are listening, are watching it. Well, not really, because who the hell pays attention to this random gossip? But people threw in other suggestions.
Yeah.
And I got little notes and say, hey, if you're talking about X, why don't you talk about Y? And I was making notes, and it gave me stuff to talk about. And another example was the other night I was writing a piece to deadline for an editor, because I'm a freelance journalist and writer. You know, my editor's going, will you please write this story? And I wrote the story. She hated it. She suggested some changes. I rewrote the story. She still hated it. And she said, you know, this is, you know, 5 o'clock, 5:30 on a Friday, or 4:30 on a Friday afternoon. She just says, look, I think your brain's imploded. Just give up and have a look on Monday. Well, a few hours later, a friend asked, what was the story about? And suddenly I had to respond within 140 characters.
Right.
What was this story about? And that was the magic thing. That unlocked it for me. I went,
right.
I know what this story is about. Yes, it's about this. Thank you.
Nice one. Let me give you another example. Where is it? From you, 5 hours ago. This is what you tweeted. The little tent.
Uh-oh.
This is you at the Writers' Festival. The little tent contains people listening via loudspeaker to what's happening inside. Must show them radio. Now, that is a good joke. That's hilarious. But if it wasn't
thank
for...
you.
But my point is, that's the sort of thing I'm after. The fact, if you didn't tweet, you wouldn't have come up with that little nice under 140 characters joke.
Actually, no. All right, James, I've done you a disservice. I am actually getting it now. You're right, because I saw this scene.
Here's another one.
A photograph of it. And, like, what is happening in this scene? And this is this bizarre thing that people want to listen to an author, someone that they love to listen to, and here they are standing huddled in the cold under a tent in the rain. I thought, you could be at home with a bottle of Tempranillo and just, you know, with the fire on and relaxing. Stuff the festival, you know, listen on the radio.
And only a few minutes later, by the looks of it, you had another good one. People see my writer's pass, then surreptitiously stare at me trying to figure out if I'm anyone famous. So, look, I think you've answered your argument in your tweet, in my question you're tweeting, that it actually does make you come up with stuff that's mildly amusing or sort of clever or insightful that makes you feel good.
Okay, I'm going to therefore own up to the fact I think you're right, and I think all of us, all of us have this little insecure narcissist inside of us
Who's
desperately seeking attention.
Yes, that's the premise of my whole, like, I didn't even start with that as a premise, I just took that as a given.
Yeah, well, actually, fair point. You're smarter than me, obviously, or at least more honest than I am, and remember that, but you're right, it's what is happening in front of me, and there is something about, maybe it's not the deadline, and that's what confused me. It's like, I don't have to tweet.
Yeah.
But if I choose to tweet, I've got 140 characters. I have to sum up the world around me in, like, what's 140 characters? It's 50 words? Not even that, 30 yeah. words. And it is it's like haiku. And in fact, there's a whole subculture scene within Twitter of describing the scene around you in haiku, the Japanese poetry form, which
yeah,
is
exactly.
five syllables, seven syllables, five syllables.
Yeah, it's like jokes. Jokes have to be the least number of words. And I've been having a bit of trouble writing jokes lately, so this could be something that helps.
Well, see, here you go. I think what you need to do, if you want to get back to writing jokes, you need to give up the radio, because you've got hours on radio.
You just become loose and flabby and keep talking till the news. Yeah, I agree
you're
with
so
you.
Right. I've just ruined your career, haven't I?
No, you've just aimed it.
Okay.
Re-aimed it from something that earns income to something that doesn't. Tweeting.
But you're right. I think the things that hit me, one, it's that immediacy about Twitter, that you just say something that's out there and someone might respond.
Yeah.
You know, and you soon find out if you've said something a bit wrong.
as you found out.
I've found out that, yes, a few times. But it's that immediacy, and it's always it's also the disposability of it. That's why I thought you had a fear about it. It's that, oh, what am I going to tweet? I have to tweet. No, you don't have to. But when you do, all right, you tweet it, and then pretty much it's gone. All right, it is archived and on the web forever, but you can pretend it's gone.
Yeah. Yeah. No,
if you're feeling dishonest, you can delete it. Although I think deleting your tweets is the ultimate dishonesty.
I think from our conversation, it has the potential to make me think more and better.
Oh, absolutely.
So that's good.
Any problems with that, but go for it. Yeah, and I think unless you do it, I feel like I'm explaining sex to a virgin, James.
You are, in a way, I guess.
Yeah. Not as good as sex, perhaps.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know what your sex life is like, but...
And you won't find out either. But it was very good to talk to you. It was very good to talk to you, and in particular, your clever and humorous tweets have answered
my
question.
It's a pleasure.
Good to talk to you. That's still Gary. He's a technology commentator, and quickly shut that conversation down when it started turning to sex lives in general and mine in particular. Okay, yesterday, when was it? No, the day before yesterday, I went for a swim and there was someone in front of me on a board and I was body surfing, and if I'd kept on the wave, I would have just crashed into him. So I pulled out of the wave and I twinged this muscle in my neck. Now, by coincidence, my wife had been to an acupuncturist who had that day taught her where the pressure point for the neck was, and my wife had a couple of needles, and she said, I know exactly where it is, and I promise you it won't hurt. And she put the needle into a place in my hand, and the good news, it did relax my neck. The bad news is I went, ow, and it really, really hurt. And my daughter said, what was that? And I said, oh, it just hit a nerve. And she said, what's a nerve? And I realised I didn't know, which is why we're talking to Professor Matthew Kiernan, who's from the Neuroscience Research Australia. Hello, Matthew. Hang on. Sorry. Hello, Matthew.
Hi. How are you going?
Good. Good. Now, you're on Twitter, aren't you?
I am on Twitter.
So do you, quickly, as a neuroscientist, before we find out what nerves are, have a quick view on whether tweeting actually makes you think better and more?
It absolutely does.
Good.
And it's a critical media. You got to get into it, James.
If it makes me think more and better, then I'm the case is being made.
There's also now the Journal of Nano, and that's just a pure journal based on tweets. So you can really learn quite a lot in a few minutes.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, you know, we're talking to another neuroscientist in about 15 minutes, Mark Lewis, who's written a book called Memoirs of an Addicted Brain about his time as a user of drugs, and explains it brilliantly. So I hope you can listen to that if you're interested. But tell me what a nerve is. When my daughter said, when I said it hit a nerve, and my daughter said, what's a nerve? And what should I have said rather than I don't know, actually?
Well, I mean, a nerve is part of the whole nervous system. And people often wonder, you know, what's the most important organ in the body? But you can sort of joke around about it, but really the most important organ is clearly your brain.
Yeah.
And that controls everything we do. From, you talked about swimming, you know, surfing, pulling out of waves. All of that is signals coming from your brain down through your spinal cord into your arms and legs, activating muscles. But it also does much more than that. It does all these things that we're almost subconscious to or unconscious to, like breathing, controls your heart rate, it controls your, you know, your stomach and eating, and then in your case, skin. Mm. So there are little nerve roots in skin, and when you touch one of those nerve roots, it sends a signal very quickly, and it's sort of equated like a kangaroo jumping along from, you know, the periphery up through to the brain to make you register that something bad is happening here and to pull your hand out of the way. Now, I'm sure the acupuncturist was very good, but, you know, it's giving you a signal to move.
Yeah, yeah, right. And are they everywhere? I mean, with a pin, and I don't suggest people do this, but if you got a pin and started poking around on your skin, would you hit a nerve every time or only now and again or mostly?
Well, every part of the skin is innervated or supplied by nerves. So, yeah, you'll feel it every time, unless okay. There's been damage to a nerve.
And then, so why did this needle go into my skin and it was all fine, fine, fine? Maybe it went a little bit deeper than they normally do. And then, bang, almost like an electric shock.
That's exactly it. But I have to say also, some of us have different pain levels, James.
Mine's very low.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's the impression we're getting.
Yes. But,
maybe it went through, the outer levels of skin are sort of not innervated, they're sort of dead.
Right.
Then once you get into real skin and the underlying sort of dermis, that's all got nerve supplies. That's when it's triggered off.
Okay, now when you say nerve supplies, I know what my skin looks like, but what do the nerves supplying them look like?
It looks like a spaghetti junction underneath. Like if you got a microscope and looked at it, it's thousands of little lines and tubes of nerves. Right. And they all come into a much bigger, it's like an electrical cable structure.
Yeah.
So it's got insulation, which is called the myelin sheath, and in the middle is the axon or the nerve itself where the signals are passing. And it's all electrical. So we are an electrical being. So if I put an electrode on my brain, I can record continuous activity. If I put electrodes over, you know, skin and so on, we can record these activities. So we are purely electrical structures. But we've evolved. Obviously, we're thinking about it. And also, when we start to move, there are things going on, like we're planning all of our movements.
Yes.
And planning what we're going to say, what we're thinking.
And so it's almost like the skin, that's a layer we can see to keep everything else in, like a big bag. The bones are to help us stand up and move. The muscles too, but the veins to pump blood. But there's another layer that covers all of us, which is the nerves.
Absolutely.
And what are they, so you've described what they look like, I guess. What are they made of?
They're made of proteins. And in fact, one of the most important parts of the protein is they're called channels, a sodium channel. So these channels are opening and closing very quickly and sodium is passing in and out. And that's how the signal is passing along. The outer side is the insulation, which is myelin. And that, again, is a protein structure. So it's all a very sort of hardwired protein network.
Right. And when people have nerve damage, now a nerve isn't, it's not just receiving pain, it's receiving, it is basically our sense of touch, isn't it?
Absolutely. And it's also a sense of nutrition. So nerves are also an energy supply and they're passing chemicals down, but also nutritional components. So there's what's called exoplasmic transport. So structures can be passed up and down nerves in a good sense, but also in a bad sense. So if you get toxic exposure, it might travel up through peripheral nerves and into the brain and cause a reaction or an infection.
Mm. And if you have nerve damage, just your nerves, say, in the bottom half of your left arm cease to work, and maybe you can tell us how that can happen or whether it can happen, but it's kind of, is it less, does that mean you can't move your arm or you can't feel your arm but you can still move it or what?
So the nerves are divided into two main groups. So the sensory nerves and motor nerves, and the sensory nerves are more for feeling and the motor nerves are for moving.
Right.
And let's say, for instance, you pulled out of the wave and a surfboard fin cut across your arm and cut the nerve.
Yeah.
So you would have no feeling, or if it was a motor nerve, you wouldn't be able to move the arm below that lesion. And gradually...
So are there sort of artery nerves, like there's arteries for blood, main highways?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I get you. Yep.
And If, the question is it a complete transection or a complete cut? If it's only a partial sort of stretch or a little tear, well, the nerve will repair itself.
Yeah.
And nerves grow back a millimetre a day or an inch a month. So if it was like a big area of the nerve affected, then it might take a few months for it to sort of grow back. There's always been this view that nerves are, once you're born with your nervous system, that's all, that you can't change it later on. But there is, as you mentioned, this idea of plasticity. And this is really one of the boom areas of neurosciences at the moment, to try and, how can you try and make nerves recover for simple things like cutting them, but also in neurological diseases like multiple sclerosis, motor neuron disease, Parkinson's disease, trying to grow things back, or even after a stroke, when a part of the brain is affected, other parts of the brain can basically morph to take over new functions or to serve functions that they weren't meant to do originally. And we have a lot of pathways in the brain that were there when we were basically before we were born and in the first year or two after we're born, and they get gradually subserved by other parts of the brain as we start to mature and start to develop. And particularly our frontal lobes take over those sort of functions, and they control how we interact with each other. So how we're talking now on the telephone, and how we, you know, when we meet someone, we shake hands. And there's a very ordered way of going through life, and that is controlled by our frontal lobes, which is really executive behavior. But if you damage any of those areas, for instance with a stroke, other parts of the brain can gradually take over, providing there's enough left to do that.
Wow. Thank you very much, Matthew.
Pleasure.
That was, I know a lot more, and I'll be able to answer questions for my kids more knowledgeably, which is important.
Well, hopefully I wasn't explaining sex to a virgin.
Good to talk to you. Professor Matthew Kiernan from the Neuroscience Research Australia. A couple of text messages about tweeting. Rob the Plumber. Hi, James. I always thought the Beatles' A Day in the Life was the original tweet. I read the news today, oh boy, 10,000 holes in Blackburn, Lancashire. Maybe it was. Hi, James. This is from Joseph. Twitter, underwhelming. Just keep the trusty notepad nearby for interesting thoughts to materialise. You'll never be short of material. I suppose so, but if you, there's less of a deadline then than if you've actually got to send something out to people.